morning, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Not That Mommy podcast. I'm really excited today because I have a really energetic and awesome guest, Jill Littlejohn Bostick. And we are connected in a few different ways, but I'm excited to hear her story on her IVF journey. Jill is an accomplished diversity, equity, and inclusion leader who has been described as enthusiastic, authentic, and compelling. She has been recognized nationally for her work in leadership development and social justice, but the title she honors most is the title of wife and daughter. So welcome, Jill.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy. So we were introduced because we have mutual friends in a networking space. And my friend reached out to me and she said, you've got to connect with Jill because she's talking so openly and so freely about some of the things that you've been talking about. And when we connected on social media, I was so amazed and astounded about how vulnerable and open you were about your IVF journey, because having been through it, I felt like I was hiding it and was so secretive about it. And so that was my first question. What made you want to be so open and vulnerable about your journey?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting because I didn't start off wanting to be open about my journey, right? So I feel like I live my life in a way that is very transparent. I've done so for probably the past 15 plus years. It's just been a part of my brand and who I am. But when it came to the IVF journey, you know, there was this, I call it an invisible shame around it. Like, you know, why can't I, you know, get pregnant on my own? You know, we had already gone through multiple IUIs and other, you know, medication. And I'm like, I haven't heard anybody else talk about this. So, I mean, it must be something I should be ashamed of. And I was talking to my husband and I was sharing those features, those thoughts with him. And he said, well, if nobody else is talking about it, why aren't you talking about it? And I said, wait, what? I said, well, I'll talk about it. I said, I'll talk about it when it's over. Like once I get a baby and I'm holding a baby, then I'll talk about my journey. And he said, well, then you're being like everybody else. He said, because you know, you're not the only one. And that just stung. And I was like, ooh, wait. And he's like, no, he's like, be who you are. You have always been open and authentic about different things. He said, what makes this any different? And he said, I'm not saying you got to do it right now, but I think you just need to think about it. So I just kind of let that sit. And when I let that sit, I started talking about it on Clubhouse and realized there were so many other women who were dealing with it. And then I decided to actually put it on my personal social media on, you know, Facebook and Instagram. And then the messages started pouring in. And at that point, I knew I had done the right thing.
Yeah. And you know, it's really so brave that you're doing it because like you said, there's this invisible shame that your body isn't able to do what you feel like it should. And then the minute you do start talking about it, so the minute that I started this community, I got so many messages and so many emails and so many people reaching out to me. And I just wanted to know if your experience, did you get people reaching out to you that were totally shocking, like friends and family that you had no idea they had gone through that?
Absolutely. Not only did I get friends and family, I received messages from people that I worked with, people I had done community service with, other people that were, you know, somewhat in the limelight and in the spotlight and had large followings, but had not discussed this. And it was like, wait, there are so many people. I mean, and the messages kept coming, whether they were phone calls, text messages, social media messages. I got videos from people. You know, shared their blogs that they were using up under different names. I mean, it was just like, I said, listen, unfortunately, which is not the club that we want to be in, we're in the majority on this issue, and we should not be ashamed of it. Because by staying in the dark or just kind of keeping it a secret, then when somebody else goes through this, then they have to deal with that shame over and over and over again. And I want to normalize the conversation so that women or men who go through this process know that they're not alone.
Yeah, that's so important. And I know for me, my husband didn't encourage me. I think he was traumatized as well through the whole process. But honestly, what made me kind of think about it was when Meghan Markle came out and said that she had a miscarriage.
Right.
And I was like, and then she said the statistic that one in 20, she said 25% of women have miscarriages. And I was floored by that number because you
Absolutely.
feel like when you're going through it, you're the only one.
Yeah.
So I totally get that. And when you were looking at IVF and you said you had been through IUI, so you weren't that wasn't your first sort of step into that process. But what were your thoughts when you were about to go to IVF and like what were your expectations? Well, obviously our expectations were to get pregnant, but what were you thinking the process was going to be like, and what did it turn out to be like for you?
So, for me, to your point, I had experienced a miscarriage, had gone through IUI, had gone through failed treatments, had gone through, what's called biochemical pregnancies, where I have a positive pregnancy test, but, within a few days, that test turns to negative because it wasn't a viable pregnancy. And so I think for IVF, it represented a space of hope and anticipation. And I was like, all right, this is going to work. Like, this is going to work, even though they expressed that there are no guarantees in IVF. And actually going into IVF for us, my success percentages were very low. And so I just thought, I have to do this. If I don't do this, then I'll always wonder what would have been. And so I just I started researching, honestly. I started researching probably more than I have on anything else,
Right.
because unfortunately I didn't have insurance that covered my treatment, right? So everything that we did with IVF was completely out of pocket. And so when you look at
Wow, okay.
that cost, that's a lot of money. And so for me, I'm like, I don't want to spend this money and just, throw a dart in the air and hope that it hits something, right? So I just started researching it. I started asking questions. I joined several communities on Facebook where, women were openly, I say openly, but they're private groups, right? So private groups
Right.
where women are openly discussing what they went through. And then I asked the nurses and doctors multiple questions. Now, I switched clinics in between my IVF process because along the process, I found another clinic that performed the exact same services at almost half the cost of my local clinic.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah. So we chose to actually fly to New York. So even with flights and hotels and rental cars, it was still about 50% less than what we would have paid
Whoa.
if we had done the IVF in here locally in Greenville. So, switching doctors again, I had another series of questions. The second clinic that I went through had a great portal where, you can type in a question to a nurse or a doctor, and within 24 hours, you had an answer. So, I felt hopeful the entire time. I just felt like it was going to work. It's going to work. It's going to work. But then, actually, when we were on the table for the egg retrieval, the doctor walked in and said, all right, well, it looks like you have two follicles, but I can't guarantee you're going to get any eggs out of those. So there's a possibility that when we go in for the egg retrieval that we don't get anything. So this is literally while I'm on the table. And
Wow.
right, I just at that moment I just thought it was I would say for like literally for a moment I was like, "Oh my goodness, this is going to fail." And then I thought, "Nope. This is not what whatever he says is not going to be the case, right? It's going to be better than that." And then, of course, afterwards, we were told we only had one embryo. Well, we had four eggs. We were told we had one embryo. And then, when it was time to actually do the transfer, there were two embryos. And so at that point, they were day three fresh embryos. They were graded the highest quality with their cell counts. And at that point, I just knew it was going to work. So in my mind, I had
Right.
twins. I'm like, these are my twins. They're coming. And I work with a fertility coach. And so it was all about having positive feelings and
Right.
thoughts because I had seen so many other women during that 2 week wait that just drive themselves. It's hard because you're wanting to test, you're wanting to worry, and I really just kind of focused on not worrying. I didn't take a at-home pregnancy test before. I went in to go get my blood test, my beta test, and when I got the results, it felt like the air had been taken out of me, right?
Right.
It was just like, but there was also, and this may sound a little odd, but somewhat a sense of peace, because I felt like at that point I had done everything that I needed to do. I had followed all of the instructions. I was as if there was a textbook example of what you should do, which there is not, by the way, but
Right.
I didn't put myself in any risk, any harm. I was practically on bed rest, light duty for those 2 weeks, and then it didn't work, and so I just thought to myself, all right, God has a bigger plan, whatever that is, God has a bigger plan, and so don't beat yourself up about something that you can't control.
That's such a good point because everything you're saying about IVF, like it gave me goosebumps because it was very similar to my process as well. I didn't have any viable embryos, but they pulled 20 eggs out of me and it
Wow.
got down to nothing. All None of them were viable. And so, and I went into it with the idea that this is going to work. I was so positive, there was not failure in my mind.
Absolutely.
And so, it like you said, that feeling when I got that call from my doctor about none of the embryos being viable, it felt like I don't understand. It was almost like she was speaking a foreign
Yep.
language. Like, I don't understand what you're saying.
Yep.
But to your point, if and I don't know if you and your husband went into it like this, but my husband and I went into it before I was pumped full of hormones, thinking we're doing it one time. We're going to try it. We're going to do
Absolutely.
it. And that's it.
Yep.
Okay. So that was my other question was, did you kind of decide before you went into it how many times you were going to try?
So we did. So our expectations were similar, right? So we decided, we were told early on that we should use donor eggs. And that was before we started the process. And this is when I was working with my local doctor, and he said, I know. And at that point, I didn't even know what a donor egg was. No idea. Had never heard of that concept before. I'd heard of donor sperm. Of course, I'd heard of adoption, but I didn't even know that donor eggs existed. And so when the doctor told me that, I was really caught off guard because I'm like, I feel like I'm a fairly educated woman, but you're literally talking Russian to me, and I don't speak Russian, right?
Right.
We decided we did research again and decided we would do IVF with my own eggs once. We would, if it was not successful, that we would do IVF potentially again with donor eggs. And if that was not successful, then we would switch to adoption. And part of that, we somewhat changed that a little bit. We are potentially looking at, because we did get some viable embryos, we have looked at, we haven't fully discussed, right? But we're thinking about if we do IVF again, we would like to try with my own eggs and then add on donor eggs to that cycle, right? So that's
Okay.
where, if we get viable embryos or viable eggs, they'll fertilize those and create embryos that are from both of us genetically, but at the same time, they would also fertilize donor eggs with my husband's sperm, so that we would have a larger lot of viable embryos. And so we've got to explore that more. But that's kind of, we thought about that before the process in terms of just with the donor eggs, and then now we want to at least try to add on my eggs as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's important to decide how far you're willing to go before you're pumped full of hormones, which kind of brings me to the next point that when you said you researched a lot regarding IVF before you did it, I did not research as much as I wish I had, and I think I was really unprepared for the hormones. And what it does to you. So talk a little bit about that and just that process for you.
So let's talk about the hormones. And that's such a good question, right? So I did a ton of research. I even researched the medicines that I would be taking. I felt like I talked to people and had a great understanding of what it would do to my body. And let me just say, that was not the case. Once I started taking the medicines, I literally felt like, because like I said, we did IUI before, and so I was on, a set of medication for that, and then we went straight into IVF, so I was on a set of medications for that. And it really took my husband to say to me, "Hey, just breathe for a second because you are on a lot of medications and you're not yourself." I was like, "What? What do you mean I'm not myself?" Right? Because I the way the heat, the I guess the chills and the way my body would heat up. I mean, I literally felt like I was going through menopause. I would wake up in hot sweats. And like, if I had a t-shirt on, it would be soaking wet. I would, have to turn on the AC and the fan at night. I would have these horrible mood swings. My,
Oh, the mood swings.
oh, I would be happy one moment, and then I would like watch a commercial on TV and then just like break down crying. And my husband's like, "Okay, there's certain things we can't watch right now." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He was like, "You're gonna cry." I was like, "You're gonna cry." I was just like, "Don't tell me what I'm gonna do." And then that would bring on another mood, right? So the mood swings were all over the place. The shots that I took, I took an additional shot. Some women take Lovenox when they're going through IVF, which is a blood thinner. That was super painful on my stomach, and I still have bruises to this day.
Oh,
From
wow.
taking that medication, they are starting to fade away somewhat, but they're there. The progesterone in oil was, I mean, there were days that I literally had tears coming down my face. And I use the lidocaine patches and lidocaine cream and, heating pads and, every play gospel music, everything trying to get through it. And my body was just always sore. I mean, and I'm only what, I'm not even a full month from having my transfer, and I still have spaces on my bottom that are sore to this day, right? So pain in my legs, in my back, in my stomach, my breasts were extremely tender and sore, and I wasn't prepared for that, and so I talk a little bit about body betrayal and what that feels like, because the medication and the hormones made me feel as if I were pregnant. I gained weight, lots of weight. And so when I look at my body, I was like, "Man, I'm already, in the stage of being pregnant." And then of course, when we didn't have a viable pregnancy, it's like, "Man, I feel like my body has betrayed me."
That's so accurate. I a lot of the same things with you and my stomach. I think, probably maybe 2 weeks in, it was just one big bruise. Because they say switch sides, but it's like it doesn't matter because your stomach is going to be one big bruise. And my husband was traveling at that time, and so and then I was also taking care of my son, and I just felt like I felt crazy, and I was so mad at him. I mean, that was my mood swing. I was so mad at him, even though he was traveling and he had to work, and there was just so much emotion because I was doing it myself when he was out of town. And and the weight gain part was crazy. I gained 40 pounds over the course of it, and it was really hard to get it off.
I'm not far
Like,
behind you. I think I've gained
was.
at least, I'm gonna say 20 were directly related to IVF, and then probably another 10 from just stress of the process. So I've definitely gained 30 pounds through this process.
Yeah, I would say that's probably accurate. I probably gained 25 through IVF, and then, I went through a depression after And not realizing it at the time, that's what it was. But I probably gained about 10, 12 pounds after that. But it was really hard to get off. And that's other things that my friends who've gone through that process have said, 3, 4 years down the line, they're still trying to get that weight off and they're doing
Right.
everything, And so the hormones, I think, is something that a lot of people going into IVF might not be aware of, that it really changes a lot in your body. And although that you may be done with it, it's really hard to kind of not only mentally and emotionally move on, but physically move on from the process.
Yeah. I mean, I think, even during the process, I tried to work out, 3 to 4 times a week and even had a trainer. And, once we did the retrieval, I stopped working out with the trainer just because I didn't want to expose myself to people, with COVID unnecessarily, right? And no matter how hard I felt like I was working out, whether it was on the Peloton or the elliptical or, lifting weights and watching what I was eating, like the weight was still coming on, right? And so as someone who has, I have been on an up and down roller coaster in relationship with my fitness journey, that was really hard for me. And
It's really
and my
hard.
husband was training for a fitness competition at the same time. So I'm looking at him, I joke and say, he got an 8-pack and I look 8 months pregnant, right? So it was just like, wow, like there's nothing that I could do. And again, I have a fertility coach and she said, listen, don't beat yourself up. What's going to happen is going to happen. And if you keep pushing yourself to get this weight off and to quote unquote stay healthy, your body is doing something that it's never done before. It hasn't gone through this process before. And so you're going to put yourself in a mental space that's going to make it really hard to get out of. And so I appreciated that advice. And so I took a step back from my fitness journey. While I went through my first round to just say, all right, other you're gonna gain weight, you're going to look different, you're gonna feel different, and that's okay.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you were working out, because when my doctor told me I was absolutely not allowed to work out
Wow.
because your ovaries get so
Right.
enlarged. So she was very concerned about, I think she called it torsion, and that if I worked out, my ovaries could, because they're so large and larger than normal, could create a situation where they could cut off the oxygen and it could create a worse situation internally for me. So she told me I couldn't work out at all and I'd have to wait an additional 20 days after the transfer for everything to kind of get back to normal. So I didn't even have that outlet to kind of release the stress. So it's interesting that that was something that they did, they that was different than my journey, because I just assumed that you couldn't work out. And so it's, but it didn't seem like it helped that much with you, it sounds
Yeah,
like.
I mean, and here's the thing too. When I say workout, once I started my stimming medicine, it was completely different. So the working out part was leading up to starting the stims. So once I started like taking my shots, then I didn't do anything. Yeah. So,
Okay, yeah, that's when they told
yeah,
me.
no.
Yeah, that's when they told me to stop. So what would you say for, I know we've talked a lot about how you felt and like the different pieces, but if a woman comes to you and says, "Jill, I'm thinking about IVF. I'm clinically infertile. We've been trying for a year." What would you say to that person about
You
IVF?
know, I would tell them, do your research. They do have an IVF probability chart or analysis that they could run. See where you stand in terms of the probability of success. Based on where that lands, decide what's comfortable for you and your family. And if it's something that you want to do, don't let finances block you. There are different ways to cover IVF if you don't have insurance, if it's not covered. But do the research, make an informed decision, because what you don't want to happen is 5, 10, 20 years down the road that you question yourself and wish you would have tried. And so I live in the land of possibilities and not in the land of regrets. And so if it is something that you consider, do the research and don't take the option off the table without learning more about the process.
That's such good advice. Such good advice. And Jill, can you share with us your Instagram in case people want to follow your journey and see how it was for
Sure,
you?
sure. So it is Jill with one L, Jill, and then Little John, LittleJohn, and that's at Jill Little John on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and it's also JillLittleJohn.com for the website.
Thank you so much for being on today. I think it's going to be really helpful for women to understand that process because I think IVF is confusing, and then you're relying on a fertility specialist to tell you all the information, and it helps to hear from someone else's point of view on what that really looks like. So I really appreciate you joining us
Awesome.
today.
Thank you for having me and continue to make a space and place for women to get information.
Oh, thanks, Jill. Have a
You
good
too.
one.